What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Racks, Fur, and Feathers. I am your host, Brent Ruff. My co-host and I, Adam Peterson, a.k.a. Mr. Mustachio, sat down with Eric Fisher and Ryan Luker. Some of you might know Ryan as Research Ryan from the Off Duty podcast, where he says maybe five words an episode. Not the case today. We talked about the big lake, Lake Michigan, and fishing for some pretty big fish. And he had all kinds of shit to say, as did Eric and Mustachio. They all have years of experience out there. I have absolutely none. So it was really cool for them to sit down and school me on some of this shit. So without further ado, episode 12, Big Lake Fishing with Ryan Luker and Eric Fisher. There we go. We're live. Here we are at Fuller's Campground in Buchanan, Michigan today, where Eric Fisher was conveniently camping when we decided to record this episode. So here we all are in his camper. Just got done eating some smoked venison. It was
very, very good.
If
very
I do tasty. Say so myself, yes, very yes. Fucking tasty.
Compliments to the chef there.
Right. Brinder for, well, I'd say six days. Yeah, it was good. We used that electric smoker, and that thing was amazing, dude. An hour and a half. I thought this thing was going to take 8 hours like it normally does when I do it at home. But it only has the one heat source coming from the side. It's one of them grills with the side kicker, you know?
Okay, yep.
So you got to kind of keep rotating everything.
How big was the piece of meat that you smoked?
It was the whole back leg.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, it was more like flash smoked, and it was really good.
Like an hour and a half.
Dude, I wasn't, well, because I put the probe in it for the internal temperature, right. You know, and I noticed that the pieces of meat looked like they shrank already, like they were done.
Right. Right.
That's weird. I've only been in there a little over an hour, and I just happened in this fancy, smancy electric smoker with the Bluetooth and everything. It's got a little spot where you can hit the pro button and see what the temperature is, and it's at like 169.
I'm
like,
oh, wow.
It's like, no shit. So I took it out, and we cut one open, and sure as fuck, it was done.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was real good.
Yes, it was.
So today, we're talking big lake fishing, which I don't know a goddamn thing about. So, yeah, who I'm sitting here with today, Mr. Mustachio, as hello, always. Hello. Eric Fisher, who we've recorded at his house.
Hello, 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 hello.
Yes, but he's never been on the show before. So this,
no.
Yeah. And you own Baghouse
Tech Services.
Baghouse Tech Services, yeah. And you how many years have you experienced fishing the Big Lake?
Oh. I grew up on a big lake driving the boat for my dad when I was a kid, so, I mean, that's the first thing I learned was how to drive the boat at 2.4 miles an hour.
Yeah, 2.4.
That's the most important part of it.
Right. No faster, no slower.
Trolling for salmon, I mean, come on. Back then, we had a 15-foot Rinker tri-haul with a 75-horse Johnson and a big rack full of downrigger rods, and that's all we had. You know, we didn't have autopilot or none of that.
I got to shut off the air conditioning before we get too carried away.
That's funny. My buddy goes out on a 20-foot boat, just autopilots a bungee cord around the steering wheel.
Oh, yeah, been there.
Light.
Been there, done that. Yeah.
I've dabbled in that, too.
Yep.
That other voice you hear over there, that is Ryan Luker, who is a, what would you call yourself, a co-host off of my brother's off-duty podcast.
Sounds good to me.
Outdoorsman, woodsman.
Yeah.
So what's your experience on the Big Lake, man?
I've been fishing it for about the last 20 years. Nice. My best friend, who lives right down the road from me, we have a trade-off deal. He comes and hunts on my property, and he takes me fishing, so that's how we work it out.
Works out
that's
well for everybody.
That's a super deal right there.
It is.
Super
call
deal.
That a win-win.
Right. So, now, what are all the big game, the game species in the Big Lake? What are we looking at here?
You know, right now they're slamming the big king salmon.
Mm-hmm. Which is also Chinook, right?
Yes,
same
Chinook,
thing.
A.K.A. Mm-hmm. King Chinook. Salmon. Steelhead. Yeah, steelhead bite. I don't know how the steelhead bite's been the last week or so, but
we caught one yesterday.
Yeah.
So
coho, been you know, we've been catching a lot of coho.
Okay.
And lake trout.
One thing I've noticed in this year is the king salmon are, you know, extra big this year.
Huge.
Right. But just in general, I mean, what are the game species people are going out for?
The targeted
lake Michigan
species.
Targets of king.
Lake trout, steelhead.
Lake trout, yeah. Steelhead, king salmon, coho salmon.
Yep.
Browns.
Browns, yes. They're out there, few and far between. But
now, what,
get lucky.
It's not necessarily
early,
a target,
you know,
fish for them, but,
brown,
but they will catch them.
You know, naturally, the brown fishing is so good when it's still cold out, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
When the lake's clear and you've still got cold nights, super cold nights, that's brown. Browns, yeah. As soon as it starts getting above freezing at night and the water surface temperature starts coming up,
yeah,
browns are gone.
Where's your...
Is this the volume on this, man?
No, bottom flat one. Just hit that button right up, 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 up.
Which, speaking of cold nights, it's the end of May, and we're sitting inside a camper right now, and it's, what, 90 degrees outside?
Yeah. So we just had to shut off the air, as you heard, so we're good.
We don't have too many more cold nights ahead of us, but...
Yeah. So, all right, so what about Atlantic salmon? I keep running on the DNR page when you're looking up species in the Big Lakes. Atlantic salmon. I don't hear people talk about catching Atlantic salmon in the Big Lakes. Right. Is it in Lake Michigan? Or is it just in one of the other Great Lakes?
Well, the salmon aren't a native species to the lake. It was a fish that was brought into the lake, so... Right. I think that's where you're getting that Atlantic portion of it.
Yeah, I've never heard of anybody saying, "Well, I went out and caught an Atlantic salmon."
Right. Same thing. Yep. You know, it's
right.
Okay, so
yeah.
Now, oh shit! I'm spilling beer all over myself already. We're only 4 minutes in, already spilling beer. We're not even doing a late recording yet.
It's gonna be a good one. All
right, so what's the difference between a trout and a salmon?
The species of fish, really. It's just a different...
Well, yeah, but... Because I always kind of thought they were basically the same thing, but apparently there's kind of... There's like a few subtle differences, like in the tail and the jawline.
Yeah, there's just their shape and their body dimensions are different, but, I mean...
Basically, as far as the meat goes...
Generally, salmon tend to be or can get bigger than trout. Yeah. Trout are generally a little bit smaller. You can get some big trout now. I've heard of, you know... steelhead being caught in the 20 plus pound range.
Yeah. But now, a steelhead is a rainbow trout, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Now, your king salmon, those tend to be a little broader body wise. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as looking at a fish from a distance, like if you got it online, bringing it to the boat, you know, tell what it is as soon as you can get eye contact with it. You know, most of us know if it's a king or if it's a laker.
Right.
You know, if just
you can tell by the way.
If it feels like you're pulling a brick up out of the water, it's a laker.
Right.
You know. Yep. But the kings, they fight better because they have a broader body, like a bluegill, you know, on an ultralight rod.
Right. You get a 20-pound king that turns sideways when you're trolling at 2.5 miles an hour behind the boat, and you got something to hold on to.
Let's talk about this 2.5 miles an hour business. So that's I've heard 2.4 since I've gotten at this campsite at least eight times.
It depends on the weather, a lot of things.
Right.
If you use a mag,
how the lake's rolling. Yeah. Right, you know.
What are you pulling? Clarity. You know, what are you dragging? Are you just... Yep.
All right, so say... You want to go out for, let's say,
lake trout.
So you get in the water and you start heading out. What are you looking for? What depth?
My normal lake trout scenario is find the nearest reef, and they're probably gonna be laying on it depending on what time the water temperature is. You know where it breaks at. But there's a reef, like I was telling you, just south of the nuke plant, and there's lake trout all over that thing. If you want to spend all day catching 3 to 8 pound lake trout. There they are.
Yep. So you're heading out toward the reef now. What are you using for bait? And what's your approach?
Called a spinning low, which is pretty much just a 3 foot leader with a treble hook, a little float, and the spinning wheels on them. Drop them behind a white paddle or a all silver paddle on the riggers, about 15 feet from the back of the ball.
At 2.4 miles an hour.
Sometimes we'll slow down a little bit.
Right.
You know.
I've
caught them down to a mile and a half an hour. Just as long as you keep that paddle, as long as that bait's working.
If you got a good enough graph and you can watch a fish maybe come up to the bait, they're not hitting it. Either A, you need to change what kind of bait you have, or even the trolling speed that you're at. They're not liking something that's there.
We've always had good luck when I've gone out with my buddy Jason Sully before. Towards the bottom is where we catch a lot of lake trout. We'll set rods and baits up a lot higher in the column for for kings or coho or whatever, but if you run something 5-10 foot off the bottom, that's usually if you don't have a reef to fish on or whatever, they tend to gravitate more towards the bottom of the lake, whether that's 90 foot deep or...
Now, does time of day matter? Like you find them on the bottom in the mornings and...
I don't think the time of day makes much of a difference. We usually try to get out there earlier in the morning before the sun pops up, because it is no fun in the sun in the middle of the lake, because there's no shade on the boat that we fish on a lot of the times. And so
I'm just cooking.
Yeah, and the sun, even if you have an overhead canopy or whatever, the sun reflects off the water. It's like standing over a mirror.
Get you from every angle.
Oh, man. That's correct. I've never been burnt as bad as I've been burnt on a boat fishing on Lake Michigan before. That's...
And it amazes me how big that lake is. I've been on the Big Lake only one time. perch fishing.
Oh, I think
I know only one time. I'm the only guy here that's never caught a steelhead.
I think the deepest point of that lake is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's like 900 and
Lake Michigan change. You're talking.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yes, 900 and change.
God damn, that's deep.
We fished out, and you got to go quite a ways to get there. I think the deepest I've ever fished in has been like 130 foot, and that's a good hour drive from the dock, from the pier out into the lake, just that's to huge. Get out that deep, yeah. And there's a lot more water out there than there are people.
I was just out there yesterday. It's, you know, from St. Joe, it's about
12 miles.
30 minutes, 40 minutes.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's at about 15 miles an hour, roughly, maybe a little more.
Which is it's plenty quick in a boat.
Yeah.
If you think, you know, the way I judge it, you know, that's 10 feet of water is pretty much, you know. But it's not too bad. We fished out. We went out to 250 one time. Listen to this. We went out to 250 looking for Lakers. We were fishing the bottom. I had the big lines on my riggers.
Holy cow.
And what we ended up doing out there, it was hot, blistering hot, over 4th of July. You know what we ended up doing? Switching to thin fins on the surface and start tearing the steelhead up.
Yeah,
awesome.
What about flies out there?
Oh yeah. Oh man. No, yeah, flies. Nobody was catching nothing. We were talking, you know, on the radio. The charter captains, they were all chasing the kings. Mm-hmm. The Lakers. We went out there and I said, piss on it, guys. We put flat lines out with thin fins on every one of them. Some Rapalas.
Now what do you call them? Thin fins.
Thin fins. It's just like almost like a. It's just a lure.
Body bait.
Body bait. Yeah. You know, you can use them for walleye even.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like a surface bait?
It's a
topwater bait?
Yeah. It's a trolling bait.
It floats, and it pulls itself down. Your speed, you can use them by how much line you let out, and it'll travel so deep because it's wedged under to go to dive.
Yep.
And gotcha.
And your speed and your line length determine the depth it swims at.
Right, and what kind of line you're using. If you're doing something like a thin fin, you're probably not running like a copper line or a lead core line. You're doing more of a... Dacron or
flatline,
that's Chinese to me, brother. I don't know what the hell you just said.
I've taken 400 copper, put a paddle and a fly on it, put it out on a board, and I mean put it way back and just tear the steelhead up.
Yep,
yeah. You want to get a workout, reel in 400 foot of copper line a couple times, with a 10 or 15 pounds.
I always say, whenever the 400 copper or the 10 color leads go off, I hand it to whoever.
Yeah, I figured that out. My buddy, he said, oh, the 10 color's going. You want it? yeah, I want to catch a fish. About three fish in. No, I don't want that shit anymore.
Brent, when we say 10 color, do you understand what 10 color
is? I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's lead core wire, all right? And it comes in rolls. I think each color is, 10 yards?
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So, 10 color, different color changes as you're letting your line out. That means you're back 100 yards.
Oh, okay.
Plus, you've got a leader beyond that.
Right.
And then you've got backer, naturally, inside, so fighting the fish.
Yep.
Oh. It's line designed to make your bait ride lower in the water because the line itself is heavier.
The lead core sinks.
Right. The color on it.
For every 10 yards, it's 10 feet in depth.
Yep. Yeah.
And every color, I should say.
It's more for you, so you know it indicates how much line is out, how much line you still have left, like... If you fight a fish and you get it into the fifth color, you know that you're about halfway to getting it to the boat. Sometimes that can be a blessing and a curse because it depends on what you got on the other end and how bad it wants to fight.
Hey, I've caught 26-pound king before, and it emptied a 10 color, and I fought him back, and then he emptied it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was in the fall.
Yeah.
I think I misspoke. For every color, it's 5 feet in depth. So,
okay.
10 color, you're looking 50 foot.
We are.
In depth.
Oh, Jesus.
In the water.
Okay.
We started using the lead core wire. Just if you want to talk about the different methods, I use like two colors behind my rigger. Like, that pulls it down below the ball wash and everything. Tear them up certain times of the year, you know.
It should be noted, too, that we're talking about trolling.
Yes.
You don't go out on the big lake and sit still and just cast like you would maybe on shore or in a smaller lake or an inland lake. This is,
or even off a pier,
right?
Because you do kind
of. So, can you guys explain what the back of the boat? I mean, the whole setup. Because for people that have never done it and don't live near the Great Lakes, I mean, there's people I know listening in Montana and out in Utah and everywhere else.
I'll explain how my buddy's setup is. Okay, he has a 17-foot Lund. So we run with the two of us. We run 6 rods total. Back of the boat, he has 2 downriggers. Then we have 2 dipsy divers, and then we run 2. 2 lead core lines is how we run our setup.
Yep. That's good two-man spread right there.
Yeah,
planer boards on the...
two planer boards on the lead course.
Yep.
Just to help get them out there.
What's right. a planer board?
A planer board is a device used to get the line sideways from the boat without letting it get back behind the boat too far. It's like a fin that you clip your line to, and you let it out. Yeah, they're
foot long. The T22s are a little longer. Mm-hmm. You know, you get them 16 inches long for the heavier lead core or copper. We use 400 copper. That's some heavy stuff.
Right.
You know, and it really sinks.
And they're designated with a left and a right side.
Yes.
What you want to run them on, and they just take your line sideways off the boat to give you a wider spread, basically. Because if you got six rods out the back of an 8-foot wide boat, that's not a lot of room to run your line in. If you got two deep on your downriggers, two out with dipsy divers on them, that pretty much covers the area that you have in the back of the boat. So you need something that's going to get the lines out wider and let them hopefully not tangle up, so you can fish extra lines, turn your boat easier. Just
what's a dipsy diver?
It is it's a puck shaped adjustable weighted fin similar to a
right,
a planer board, but this is made to dive underwater, and you can dial the weight to change the angle of it from whichever side of the boat you're coming off of to create its distance away from the boat and its depth. It'll mm-hmm. dive at its own
right,
you know. More line, like I said, the more line you let out, the deeper it'll dive.
I'm sure it's a lot more simple when you're out there doing yes. it, but it just sounds so goddamn right. complicated.
When you buy them, they come usually in the instructions. They come with some graph. So
yeah. right,
yeah. if you're letting out 135 foot of line, you're going to be, and you're at number three on your dipsy diver, you're going to be 60 foot down, right. roughly.
It'll okay. tell you, you know.
Yeah, I was actually excited to hear you decide to explain that, because I'm explaining dipsy diver. How exactly. would you do that? It, yeah. it is a puck shape, and yeah. it does have a little fin on it,
yep.
With a big, like a swivel clip, basically. Now, do you run flashers behind yours normally?
Occasionally.
Yep. Flashers are, what's the other one?
We're talking about metal flashers?
Just even plastic ones, fish chasers?
Oh, yeah.
So there's usually more hardware behind them. It's just a different way to fish that allows you, once again, to get your line out and away from the boat.
Nice and spread out. Way.
That's, right.
The dipsies have always been my most effective way of catching fish with flies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
Yep.
With a flasher or a spin
yep.
doctor.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I was thinking of spin doctor. I couldn't remember the name of it.
You know, that's the most effective way to fish flies.
Spin on doctor.
The
big lake.
It's a type of, it's almost a fish-shaped piece of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say a fish, there's 8-inch, there's 10-inch. But it's shaped like a fish, and it's got a directional fin on it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it hooks to your line, and it's erratic through the water, which brings your fly. Yeah. Your fly's not as erratic.
It helps give it motion.
But it moves.
It gives help motion to your bait.
Right. Yeah. And the ones that I've seen have different holes in them. You can set them up. They're a little bit adjustable.
I think they got three holes in them.
You can adjust the head. You know, the end hole, it's going to be less erratic. If you got it in the third hole back, it's going to cause it to want to do that. It's going to catch more water. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay. Okay.
It basically is
just adding turbulence in the
correct. Right. Yeah.
You know, if you look at it like this, a lot of people have never done it, but they say that there's guys that have been out bass fishing, or they pike fish. They use Rapalas. They got a diver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got a surface bait, crank bait. We also use J plugs, which you can use in small lakes. But it's that water resistance and working your baits and all the equipment. You got to learn, once you get that part down, how stuff pulls in the water.
Right. There's a lot more to it. Like with most things we talk about, there's more to it than just buying a fishing pole, getting a boat, and going out and dropping the line in the water and trolling it 2.5 or 2.4 miles an hour.
Yep.
There's so many subtleties to it. The length of the rod that you use, the type of line that you use, the type of gear you have on the end of your rod. There's a handful of different plugs you can use. There's a handful of different flies, different spinners, spoons. Meat rigs, like we were talking about, mm-hmm. have been... getting a lot more popular in the last couple of years, so it's a wide open area that a lot of fun to get into if you got the time and
so it's like, is it kind of the basic with your dipsy divers and all that shit, no matter for what you're trolling for, those are kind of
right. When you put your lines down, you can target specific species like lake trout. Sometimes there are ways to fish more directly to them. But for the most part, when you put your lines down, you're at the mercy of whatever wants to bite. So
right.
you run the risk of
catching. So it's kind of whatever starts biting, and then you start targeting?
I mean, no. You're just out targeting whatever's going to bite.
Basically. No, you're just driving 2.4 yeah. miles an hour having a conversation right on the boat.
Right.
I tell you, there's been days I come back in, you know, in the last 10 years, I've probably been skunked 3 times.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's talk about.
And I call it washing spoons. I'd come home, I text my wife. She goes, "How'd you do?" I said, "Well, all my baits are clean."
Yeah.
I've been trying every damn one of them.
Yeah,
and
we're
washing them down.
Yeah.
Now, you were just fishing in a tournament on the big lake.
Yeah, we fished the Hoosier Coho Classic a couple weeks ago out of Michigan City.
How'd you guys do?
We first day we ended up in fifth position we were in the top 10. I know. Wait, we missed the big fish by 3/4 of a pound, but we ended up finishing the whole thing in 14th.
And there was how many people?
Oh, there was like 32 boats, I think.
That's respectable.
Yeah, it's not bad then.
Yeah. I mean, we were doing good the first day. We went back to the same spot and we
messed now around
with some 3 to 8 pound lake trout for a few hours, and by the time we got out to the Big Kings.
Could catch multiple
18 pounder, a 10 pounder, and then boom, it was time to go weigh in because we were.
So you can catch multiple species, and it's just a.
Yeah, we were allowed 3 trout, you know, up to 3 trout.
Okay.
You know. Per person, I think you get 3 trout. Is it 5 salmon?
Or yeah. 3? Well, 5, we were only 5. Allowed. It was a number of fish per boat.
Okay.
So we all turned in, everybody turned in 5 fish the first day, 5 fish the second day.
That was just for the tournament.
Combined weight, yeah.
In general, the fishing regulation is that you're allowed 3 trout, whether it's a lake trout, a steelhead, and up to 5 salmon, whether that's, yep. you know, 2 kings, 3 cohos, all coho, all kings. You know,
which they call them kings for a reason, right? So you'd want more kings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because they're bigger. It, right?
Some tournaments require you to have at least one. Or
one trout.
One, right. one lake trout.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, oh, one really? Trout. It could be yep. a steelhead or a lake trout, or right. they may be specific and say everybody's got to have a laker.
Right, right, right. And in general, fishing, if you want to get the most meat per fish, you're going to want a king salmon because they get a lot bigger and they have a lot better fillet on them. But that too is up to the discretion of the person that's fishing and the appetite you got. You know, it's some people can't stand lake trout. Some people love lake trout.
What'd you call the lake trout earlier?
Greasers.
Greasers, yeah. Greasy.
Oh, they're great for smoking, though. You smoke those things. You know what you do? Don't go crazy on the heat. Keep the heat down. Smoke them slow.
Or fish really patties. Good.
Yeah. They make great fish patties, yeah.
Now, we were talking color earlier, too. You said the trout tend to be more white and the salmon tend to be reddish, orange.
Depending on the fish. The lake trout is more of a fleshy colored.
It's like a yellow, yellowish.
Yeah.
And the younger ones don't have as deep of a color. The older ones tend to be a lot darker.
Yeah.
And the flesh color. With the kings, they tend to be more of a
little pinkish or
pinky, With the coho, you dance the line sometimes, they can almost look red.
Like an orange.
Yeah, like a ruby red sort of.
I got a bag at home right now. You can definitely tell the difference. You got real light pink,
right?
And then you got some bright red meat. Yeah,
that coho is the steak of the lake.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. Tender and just as delicious as any fish you'll ever want to eat. You know, and it's easy to cook and it's hard to mess it up. So
sounds like somebody needs to take me fucking fishing. Damn it. Yeah, I've never done it, you know. I never really.
Well, this is Racks, Fur, Feathers, and Fins today.
Yeah. Special Fins edition.
We're gonna do a special Fins edition, hopefully before the summer's over. Yeah. Maybe this fall when we're throwing J plugs, you know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of falls, all right, so now we got let's talk spawning. I'm sure all this. Not all the species do the same shit, right? So there's your fall run and spring run. What are they talking about when you hear spring run?
Spring run.
What are we talking?
That's just the young fish coming back to the lake.
Which young fish?
The ones that the fall fish went up river. The 4-year olds.
Species?
We're talking about king salmon. When they're 4 years old, they head up river.
Right.
Some younger fish follow them just because their instinct, you know.
Right.
But they head up river to where they were originally
dropped off.
Dropped off, and they spawn, lay their eggs. And then they die off, 99% of them.
Yep.
And then those young grow up a little bit, and then they head back to the lake.
That would be your fall running, right?
No. That's your spring run.
Your spring run.
Fall run is when they're going up river to spawn.
Spring is when the babies are coming back to the lake.
Fall is where it's to get on the big lake, there's only a couple areas you can do it, like New Buffalo, St. Joe. So the access to the waterways where they're going to come up in and spawn gets pretty tight because it kind of congest them up at the mouth of the pier, or you know, wherever they're coming into the river at, so they get a push up in the river. It can last a couple weeks sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's just a hot time to be fishing. Some people try to plan their season around.
I mean, you could.
Yeah, a lot of times they like to sit like right at the mouth of the piers, and right. And that's where they really get their feeding frenzy before they make their big push up the river.
Where the river spills out into the lake, it kind of pushes that river kind of brackish water. If you ever head out, you can see where the river, the water kind of stops and the lake water starts. It'll be a real distinct mud line.
And that mud line moves, you know, depending on the weather, the wind direction, the
weather, you know, current.
Everything.
Wind.
Yep. That thing could stretch all the way up past, you know, it could all come out and go straight north. I've seen it go straight north.
Yep.
We followed the edge of it one time. It went straight north. We followed the edge of it. We even got out into like 60 foot of water.
Wow.
And followed it. It was all real, and we caught fish all the way around that sucker.
Because
back on the inside of it.
The mud line offers an area for some of the bigger fish to hide and ambush the smaller fish that'll be traveling on it. It's like an underwater reef, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more fluid and less, you know, structural.
Their vision is, you know, kind of reduced as well.
Right. So. Right.
The undaunting fish, the little fish that don't, you know, the young ones or the alewives that are not aware of it.
The
salmon are laying in, the big kings are laying in that dirty water right on the edge of the clear water where we're fishing right through. And they're jumping out and grabbing alewives, they're jumping out grabbing our spoons,
it's
our
like
flies.
Fishing in a lake on the edge of a weed bed.
Yeah.
When you run a crankbait down, you know.
See, now you're talking my language.
An area of lily pad, you know, whatever you got, it's the same thing.
Walking frog.
Right, yeah, there you go.
Ambush style predation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, yeah. So, like, pan fishing, bass fishing, that I get.
Yeah.
Big lake fishing, man, I am.
We've done the same with steelhead, too, in the mud line, on the surface,
mm-hmm.
you know. Zigzag troll in and out of that thing. Real, you know, you might even have to slow down just a little bit with the thin fins, if you know.
Now,
once you find that depth, though, there.
I know a gentleman, I'm not going to name him, but I know a gentleman that says a lot of times when they're running in the streams and shit that they won't bite. Or the females won't bite.
That's true.
Yeah.
And he snags them. Now, that's illegal.
Yeah, that's illegal.
That's right. Illegal as shit. Right.
I think unless you're a Native American.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And Native even Americans
then, and you got to be a certain percentage.
Because I would assume the DNR is looking for holes in the mouth if you get one.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been checked by a DNR officer like that, but obviously if you're out doing nefarious things, it'll be easy for them to tell what you're up to. You know, they're trained to recognize somebody who's been snagging fish. You know,
they're gonna see you before you see them.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
If you got a cooler
full of fish, he's been talked
to
before.
Yeah, and nobody's catching anything around you, and all of a sudden you walk off with a limit of fish. There's gonna be some questions.
I mean, when I was a kid, don't get me wrong, you know, I'm gonna admit to this, but we filled up the trunk of a Cadillac Eldorado, kicking them out of them of a local river in Bering County, a little creek. Going in, kick them, but right out with tennis shoes.
Up there.
You know, right. Salmon were so plentiful.
Right. Well, in Buchanan,
what's
the McCoy Creek right there by Shermer Parkway?
McCoy Creek gets a lot in there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll get stacked up in there.
I'm talking about miles from Buchanan.
No, they get to a point though where they're not even edible, right? Where
they get so old and beat up, you know. They're going up river to die, you know.
Right. When they go up,
put it this way, they're pre-baked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've been in that warm water, you know.
Them spawning is the last thing that they're going to do, and they usually exert every bit of their energy that they have in their body when they spawn, so much so that in the fall
they're going upstream the whole time.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, even that, they're fanning beds. They're actively keeping other fish away from what they're doing. And if you see salmon in the fall in the river, they might have a white spot on their tail where they've been literally rubbing their tail off, sweeping their bed off, or just trying to stay alive. They will rot to death in the river before they'll actually just give up and die,
mm-hmm.
more or less, because it is in the warmer water.
And you've seen the I'm sure you've seen the sockeye salmon commercials on TV when it shows a half the salmon sticking out of the water.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yep.
I've seen the same thing happen right here in these local streams around Buchanan and Bering Springs.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
But big kings, I'm talking about. You know, I'm talking about a fish that's from fin to the belly that tall.
Right. Yeah.
And none of these are native.
No, not to the lake.
They've all been introduced.
That's pretty cool.
What was the native numbers of lake trout, right?
That is
I believe so, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and they stock there's fisheries all up and down the shoreline.
Well, I think, in my opinion, the reason for the size of the king that are being caught this year right now is they cut back on stocking the last few years.
Yeah. There was actually a concerted effort not to put so many fish in the water.
And at least less of those fish came from the deep water back up in to get caught. So that, you know, the catch was down the last couple of years.
Right.
But the 4-year-olds that we all let mature are coming to show themselves now.
Right.
Because it's time to go up river.
Yeah, basically.
They're coming in from the, they'll move in and out all year, but, they're.
People think what they want about the DNR, but they've done an excellent job keeping fish in the Great Lakes stocked. They really manage their fisheries, I think, very well. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. How many people do you know that go out and enjoy this?
Yeah.
You know, and if you go out and you pull 20 fish off the lake every time you go out, you're not hurting the population at all. That's that many fish out there. They've done such a great job of keeping those numbers up with the way that they manage, like you said, they didn't stock as many fish the last couple of years because they knew how many fish were supposedly out there, and they wanted to see some of those fish mature a little bit, get bigger, and then come back in to where people, I guess, would have access to them, or just...
Yeah.
No, that's...
I mean, that's all, stocking those fish, that's all funded by...
Taxpayer dollars.
When you buy your fishing license.
Yep.
Everything.
When you buy your hunt license, when you buy your base tag.
And I had a lot of friends, charter captain buddies, personal friends that fish for hobby fish like I did, But they all had their mixed opinions on when they cut back on the stocking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're going to kill fishing.
Right.
Those are the same guys that are out there licking their chops right now, catching these mid-20s kings all day long.
It's like shooting themselves in the foot. Why would the state want to do that? I mean, that's a huge tourist industry, I have to imagine.
Yeah.
There's people that come up from Indiana,
Chicago.
Yeah. Chicago, everywhere,
Yeah, but you got to be careful. I mean, it's all got to do with the ecosystem and just the way everything's working.
Right,
you got to manage your numbers.
Speaking of that, there's some invasive species in the big lake
gobies.
We don't want there, right?
Yeah. Goldfish.
What are those?
Gobies?
Gobies,
gobies, I don't even know where they came from, but they're about the ugliest damn fish you could catch.
Oh, yeah. It looks like some kind of mixture of used to call them bullhead and a... giant tadpole.
Right. Like I don't really know if those are hurting or not. I don't know. Yeah.
When you go perch fishing, sometimes it's a struggle to keep your bait down without catching them damn things.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't imagine anybody eats them. They're so ugly.
They're a bottom feeder, from my understanding.
Yeah.
On the inland lakes, you hear about dogfish.
Kind of like a sculpin. You ever
sculpin?
See one of them?
I haven't. No.
It's a saltwater version of what I think more or less looks like a goby.
Now, what do they do? That's so.
They eat a lot of other food. Mm-hmm. They're incredibly voracious. So they take food away from the other more productive species.
Game fish, the ones that people are paying to go.
Well, actually, some of the game fish eat the gobies too. But for the most part, the gobies take a lot of food away from like the alewife or perch. For example,
I think the gobies get eaten. The young gobies get eaten by the lake trout.
Yeah, that's what makes them greasy.
It's a good theory. I believe that.
Could be.
Hey, we talked about it before. You are what you eat. We talk about bears and they eat blueberries fish and absolutely. Now we were talking earlier about mortality rates and catch and release. You said catch and release with these goddamn things has got to be done quick.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now can we explain why? Well, can anybody want to take that on?
You're forcing the fish to exert itself, pulling against the motion of the boat, as well as the fight that the fish itself is going to have trying not to get caught. It's going to wear itself out for the most part, unless you can skip that son of a bitch across the top of the water all the way up to the boat. Pretty much any fish you bring into the boat in this style of fishing, you're going to keep. I mean, if you don't keep it,
you're
probably going to die.
I would say the smaller the fish, the higher the mortality, the higher the success rate is going to be for a successful
because
release
you can just pull
because
right in.
They're smaller. You can get them up on top of the water, get them in, and get them gone.
Now, isn't there something with their skin? Or the scales or something? You can't grab them like you would like a bluegill and then put the bluegill back in the water like you couldn't grab a trout.
Take
a picture and then stick it back in the water.
I imagine you could.
You could.
I just don't think it's
They're an oilier fish, though.
Yeah. I heard somewhere where they have like some film or something on the outside.
You pull them out and hold them. It's like a drooling dog, the drooling all over the place.
Yeah, right? Like one of my St. Bernards.
To talk about rubbing the slime coat off a salmon, unless you're laying on top of that thing, you're going to have a hard time you know, messing it up enough to hurt it. If you hold it by the tail and underneath it, you're not really going to take a lot of that slime off of it.
Right, yeah.
Unless you got all hands on it when it gets in there, and you just like to rub it, but...
Well, and you said your technique is just put them in the net, unhook it, and flip the net?
Yeah, you know, well, I do a lot of tournament fishing, so we can, you know, if we're going to keep them...
I was going to say, that probably be the only time we'd be releasing them.
In the tournaments I fish, if you don't break the plane of the boat, you keep them in the net so you can release from the net.
Right.
It's legal, and it's, you know...
Because in a tournament, if you break the plane of the boat,
we'll keep them in the water until you're ready to pull them up, get them done, and then let them go.
Right. Usually by the time you get them into the net, hopefully the fish is exhausted enough that it's once you get in the net, it's docile. It's like a teddy bear for the most part.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also hoping, since I release a lot of fish, those same fish are going to get smart and get really big.
There you go.
So when I catch them next time, man, they're going to be like, you got me again. But they'll be
nice. It's good karma.
Big son of a bitch.
Yep.
Yeah. So kings, deeper water?
Nope.
Not necessarily.
It's all about temperature, current, wind directions, how bright the sun is. There's
the day of the week sometimes. There's so many variables
pressure,
to it.
You know.
You can go out sometimes in 30 or 40 foot of water and catch just as many fish, and you don't have to travel 45 minutes or an hour to get to the water to catch them in. That being said, there's times where you have to travel out to that deeper water because that's where the fish are. The fish move around. And usually, if you got your thumb on the pulse, if you know a lot of people that fish, and you got a lot of friends or buddies that do it, you can get a pretty good idea about what you need to do when you get there.
Yeah.
Check a lot of boards online. There's a lot of people that talk about it when they do it. And there's a lot of people that talk about it while they're doing it. So it's
See, my theory is kings normally like the 42 to 45 degree water zone.
Correct. Right.
And I use a fish hawk, which is a temperature probe I put down on my rigger ball.
Right.
You find that temperature break in the water, because your surface temperature is always going to be warmer due to sunlight.
Right, right.
You know?
And when you say warmer, we're not talking like 80 degrees ever.
No, the lake,
big as it is, if it gets 62 or 63, that's pretty hot on the surface, which to us is fucking cold. Really cold.
Yeah, you go out, you find that temperature break, and then work the break, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I usually stage stuff deeper and deeper and deeper until I find something that hits on a fish.
Right,
then I'll
start
dropping everything down to it.
Kind of get dialed in.
Yeah.
It's when I go with my buddies, sometimes we'll take another guy with us. There'll be three of us in the boat, and we can run 9 rods, and we do out of the back of an 18-foot boat. That's, we call it the Iron Curtain, because there's just lines everywhere across the back of the boat. And once we figure out, you know, if this rod at this depth with this color jig or this color spoon hits a couple times in a row, We'll sort of change some stuff around, mess with the rigging a little bit, and kind of get things back in that same zone at that same depth with a similar color or that same color on a different rod, and just see if we can maximize on the potential. You know, it's like anything else. When you find something that works in the circumstance that you're in, you want to take that and apply that to the rest of the stuff that you're doing and try and just make the best out of what you got. There's been days where I've got skunked out there before. You know, it's no fun fishing, trolling for 4 or 5 hours, getting burnt, and not catching.
And I've also went out there on days. I had my all-time favorite lure was called Lemon Ice. It's a spoon, Lemon Ice spoon. It's a silver spoon. It's got like a yellow lemon-colored stripes and some painted lemon colors on the one side. It's pretty slick. It's got like a diagonal stripe with diamonds in it. And if I would have had 10 of those, I could have caught every fish in the lake. I had everything but the kitchen sink out there. The only thing I was catching fish on were the two Lemon Ice.
I think there probably is a lure named Kitchen Sink, too.
Yeah,
by the way.
You know what I'm saying?
There's so many names for
there's
lures
wild
nowadays.
Ones, too, buddy.
Mixed veggies and this.
Yeah. Mixed veggies?
Yeah, that's a very popular.
I had an all-purpose spoon. It was my favorite. It's called Kevorkian.
Yeah. Kevorkian, like
it was
Dr.
like a
Kevorkian.
Dark purple metallic, man. Yep. This thing caught fish.
I've seen it.
I mean, And actually, it did better on the rougher the chop of the lake, you know, because the more action it would get. Because you give a lot of action when you're bouncing stuff, too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It does come out in the tail end of...
Now, Uncle Gil, let's talk weather. Like, so if it's really windy and choppy out on the lake, I mean, as far as the fish biting, does it matter?
Well, the fish are going to bite, you know.
The fish are always out there.
It just sucks for you.
When they bite.
Yeah, you got you know, how big a boat are you in? What can you handle?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So, speaking of that, we were talking earlier, like, you don't need a big-ass boat and a lot of money to go do this.
You know, that's a big misconception a lot of people think, just because you're out trolling for salmon and you got the big boat. You know, you don't need none of that.
Right.
You know, I would be comfortable in an 18-footer.
Right.
You know, so maybe a deep V with the setup on it. You're good to go.
Well, like I said, my buddy's is a 17-foot Lund with a deep V on it.
You got to watch the weather, play the weather.
Right. I fished out of that boat for the last 20 years. I feel comfortable.
You know, if you know there's weather going to supposedly come, don't go so far out.
On that note, when I went up to the pier in New Buffalo, two months ago, fishing up there, there was a guy in a canoe, and he had built himself with 2x4s and whatever the hell he had out the side of it, like a rigger on the side, and he took his canoe with a trolling motor out around the pier head and then immediately tucked back into shore. But I've seen guys in a 12 or 14 foot John boat before. You know, if the lake is calm, flat, there are guys that get out in those type of boats and do it. There are guys that kayak out there and troll spoons and troll plugs.
There's a couple guys that kayak that never make it back either.
And you know, to troll, you don't need to have the downriggers set up to know that. You can just have rod holders or trees set up and use boards, lead core, copper, dipsies, you know.
A typical setup, correct me if I'm wrong, out of the back of the boat, your downriggers are usually right tight to the outboard if you have an outboard. If it's an inboard boat, your downriggers are going to be right usually towards the center of the back of the boat, because those go straight down and straight out. The rest of your rods are going to be up in the air or with a dipsy diver or a planer board on them to get them out and away from the boat in a controlled way. Two downriggers is normally the setup, one on either side. Yeah. Are there boats that run more than two downriggers?
Yeah. I had a Sea Ray that we ran four off of, two feet in off the back, and then we had the corners, but the corners were long arms to get it out a little.
Right.
So I could adjust the short arms in the back, keep it, you know, and then the long arms. But
a downrigger is basically a winch.
Thanks, because that was my next question.
Yeah. It's a winch with a weight on the bottom.
Like a 5-pound weight or whatever, and the weight usually has a fin on it to keep it oriented in the water, because off the back of the weight, you're going to clip, or the weight just goes down, and you clip your line to like a release on the downrigger cable.
You hook a lead ball to a steel braided downrigger cable.
Right.
And it's directional. Sometimes they're even shaped like a fish. You know? Mm-hmm. Normally they're just a round ball with a fin, so it's going to follow where it's pulled from.
Right.
And then off of that, you have a rubber or mechanical release. I always use a release, then I use a rubber band.
Yeah.
I'm a rubber band guy, man.
I've seen that.
Because I like to use 12-pound test on my riggers. It's just more fun, you know?
Right.
Because it's not as long of a fight away from the boat like lead core or copper.
Right.
You know, it's more fun to me. Catching fish off the riggers. You know, yeah, I like to get fancy with the copper, but my all-time favorite's 20-pound king off a rigger.
Yeah. It's a lot.
You know, it's you, a lot monofilament line.
Yep.
And a fishing pole and that fish.
Yep.
You know? God. I almost got goosebumps.
It's fun, dude. It's a blast.
It's a true blast. Yeah. If you go out with somebody who knows what they're doing, anybody can do it. So it's open to anybody that wants to buy a fishing license and spend the time to learn how to excel at the sport. I've done it for 15 or 20 years now with a buddy of mine.
If you've got the boat, say you got a fish finder, you got a decent-sized motor that can move your boat, it'll also idle down and runs really good.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel comfortable with your equipment. Most of these guys that fish the river and these bass, these bigger deep V's, you know, you don't have to have riggers. You go spend $300 or $400 on some planer boards, some line for some, and go get your rods. You're fishing for salmon and you're catching some big
aluminum
fish.
Rod holders, some you know, some trees or whatever. You can do it with just plugs if that's what you want to do, with four rods out the back of a V bottom boat. You know,
in the fall when it starts getting cold again, the J plugs become like money.
Yep. And when those fish start to come up and push up the river, it's easier for guys with a smaller boat to get more fish, because they're a little more congested. They're in a little tighter spot. So if you can get out there and push your way through the crowd of people, you know, you have a good opportunity at catching some fish.
Yeah, crowd of people. Mouth of the rivers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the mouth of the river, like when everybody's in line. I've been down there for that, where everybody's got to take their turn casting.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a prediction, because I know a lot of my friends that will follow this on Facebook, you know, Rex, Furs and Feathers, and Finn's Edition, I guess we call this. This fall, the pearl-colored or silver mag J-plugs with the red back on them, the narrow red back, are going to be on fire.
That's your hot tip? That's your hot tip.
You guys heard it here first.
Watch and see.
Hey, I believe it.
Just because of the late spring, or, you know, it was freaking cold.
It was freezing at night
up until 2 weeks
weird.
Ago.
Yeah,
you know,
this year,
June.
We kind of skipped spring.
We had winter that lasted way longer than it should have, and then there was no spring. We just went from winter like it.
We were underwater for a quick second.
Oh my God. We're still, underwater. And then we went straight to summer. It went from being like 60 degrees in the middle of the day to 90 degrees in the middle of the day for no particular reason.
Yeah.
Global warming.
Right.
Thanks, Obama.
Right. Yeah. Damn Al Gore.
Right. Yeah, no, seriously. I mean, it makes sense. Like, I think that the weather has everything to do with everything. Right. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
In the outdoors.
I think summer's going to run late this year as well.
Yeah. I think
I think it's going to be t-shirt weather on Halloween.
Which sucks
for
deer hunting.
Right. For a sweatshirt on Halloween. Yeah. You know?
Bow hunting, a camouflage t-shirt. Yeah.
And like we talked before, photo period has a lot to do with that shit.
Deer hunting, that's going to...
It's going to suck because...
I'm going to stick to my guns this year. I'm not even going to break a bow or nothing out until the last week of bow season before gun opens.
Man, I tell myself that shit every year. I'm going to take it easy at the beginning of bow season and then hit it harder in the rut.
September, you start shaking real bad. Oh my God, October's here.
Yeah,
it'd be so bad if you had a freezer or something, though. You know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like I can... If I shoot a deer in warm weather, I have a way to take care of it. It's just... You got to do it right now. Like we talked, you can't wait. You know, your clock's ticking. You shoot it at 60 degrees out. You got to get that.
Right.
Get your hops and get that fucking hide off.
First thing you do is get that sucker. As soon as you get in the truck, get it packed full of ice.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Full of ice.
Yeah.
Do what you got to do.
Yeah. Quarter it. Get it stuck in your beer fridge or whatever you need to do.
I'll gut them and stop and buy me a damn thing of salt.
I never
sprinkle the inside with salt. Pack it full of ice.
Mm hmm.
All right, so now we're on salt. So now you guys got me thinking food. So, cooking these damn things.
Hang that fucker upside down, let it packed with ice, put a blanket around it. At least let it cool down and then skin that bitch.
Yeah. So cooking these big lake fish.
Right.
Oh, man.
I know, Adam, you are a chef extraordinaire.
Yeah,
so.
What do you want to hear about?
So what's your favorite? We'll go kings. What's your favorite? Or steelhead. Everybody catches steelhead.
I don't like to cook too big of a fillet. If I have a big king fillet, I like to cut it kind of into steaks.
Yep.
I'll trim off some of the on the fillet on a bigger fish.
Okay, time out. Can we back up? Let's go cleaning first.
Okay.
Cleaning the fish. What do you do?
Basic fillet. I mean,
gutting to fillet.
Yeah, there's not really any gutting on it. You run the knife around the back. You start at the top of the head, run it around the back of the gill plate in the soft part of the fish, straight down the spine. If you got a long knife that's sharp, my buddy does it in just one motion. He'll cut the gill plate down, stick the knife in, down the spine, done. You know, the fillet will have the skin on it.
Underneath the, over the rib bones?
Yeah. Well, it's through the rib bones, and then you just trim those off real quick.
Gotcha.
You just straight down the spine, through the fish, whatever you cut in the process. You want to keep it as tight to the spine as you can to get all that meat off of there. And then anything that's on the fillet that you don't want to keep is easy to trim off.
Yep.
The rib meat, you know, you don't want any bones in it, so you just kind of get underneath those and sort of flay them right off. I mean, they come...
Yeah, you can lay that thing out there, and you can use that knife if it's a good knife.
Right.
I use a 18-inch Victorinox.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost shaped like miniature machete something the pirate would be carrying, you know?
They make bubble blades, too, those bubble knives.
I'll cut down in there, and I'll just turn that knife and just...
Yep. And it sounds weird as hell when you do it.
You cut through the rib bones. Then you flip that fillet over, and you just
lay underneath
all the rib bones and slice them right out, and then just cut that edge of skin off and
you can scale it if you want. You can keep the skin on, or you can slide your fillet knife, again if you got a good sharp knife and you're proficient with it, underneath the meat, between the meat and the skin, and just the skin's kind of tough, so you kind of point your blade down towards the skin itself and just gentle pressure.
Shaving.
Yep. You don't really have to rock it if you got a good knife. It's just you hold it tight and you can almost pull the fillet across the knife as you're going to separate the skin from the meat. Or you can scale it and keep the skin on.
I said, now, if you were keeping the skin on, how would you want to... That'd be like what more for smoking?
It helps to hold the meat together. Some people prefer to eat the skin. If you do it right on the grill, you can get the skin crispy.
and it's a different texture.
That's the method I was talking to him about.
The fish will be soft and flaky, and that skin will be crispy and maybe a little salty, and it'll just be a party in your mouth. You know, it's a good time, man.
Well, a quick one, what I like to do, make a foil pack.
Yeah.
And lay that skin side down and just dress the top with butter, lemon pepper seasoning, a little bit of dill maybe. Mm-hmm. If you want to get a little crazy, you can put a little pepper on it, some hot stuff.
Pretty much the fish itself is sturdy enough to stand up to anything you want to season it with.
Yep.
As long as you're not getting too carried away. Like, you don't want to put this particular fish maybe in like a fish stew. Mm. It's not going to hold up real good in that. But for like flavoring it, it'll take a lot of hard flavors and do really well with it. The fish itself has a mild gamey flavor to it, I think. Some of the bigger fish tend to have
more of a fishy flavor. We're just talking kings?
In general.
Or just salmon in general?
You know.
Bigger fish versus smaller
fish. Imagine, I know you've eaten tuna fish your whole life.
Yep.
You know, salmon just is like a gamey tuna fish to me. You know, the flakiness of it, you know, it's just...
Right.
Oh, yeah, I'd be eating salmon.
There's a lot of things you can do to it when you cook it.
Another thing is make sure you get the mud vein out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big one,
you know,
too.
We're talking some salmon fillets that are 2.5-3 inches thick.
Yeah. The big ones, there's a lot of meat on them. And like I said, with a fillet that big, if you got a 2.5-foot long fillet... It's 3 inches thick or 2 inches thick, you can throw that by itself on the grill and take particular care, or throw it in your smoker and take care to treat it right. But for me, it's easier to cut it into steaks, so everything's more of a uniform shape, and it cooks a lot more evenly, and you have a lot more control over the finished product, I think, without getting like micromanaging your grill to make sure this thing comes out right. It's a lot easier just to get them in like portion.
So typically you don't want to deep fry these things like you would a panfish.
No. I think you can. You probably could.
You can.
I've never heard of anybody doing it.
I've deep fried them. I use a little bit of shore mix.
Yeah.
And then some Lowry's seasoned salt.
Yep.
You know. They're decent, you know.
We should get a sponsorship from Lowry's, because Lowry's is good on every fucking thing.
Lowry's?
Yeah.
Onion, garlic.
Yep.
I will say the coho are usually the best that way. What I'll do with my coho, I'll dry, you know, get it all filleted, chunked up, and I'll pat it dry as best I can.
Yeah. Yep.
And then I'll start wiping mustard on it before I dip it. Talk about good. Mm-hmm. That mustard gives it.
See, I use mustard on my venison meatloaf too. That's
the same idea.
I baste it with mustard while it's dry. That way, it really gets it, and then I'll dip it in whatever batter, and then deep fry them. Mm-hmm. It gives them a little more. You know,
I use it on my ribs too, as a matter of fact, when I smoke those.
To cook them, you can do a foil pack. Is really easy if you cut up a white onion. If you want to use a fresh lemon, you can do that with some black pepper. That's an easy way to do it. Half a stick of butter, a lemon cut up, squeezed out.
So like
fish.
Lemon and salmon are like deer and garlic and onion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, garlic and onion go good on fish too. You know.
But you wouldn't do lemon on men, right? So lemon.
You could. I mean.
You ever tried it?
Yeah.
You did?
I've done it before. I've done like an Italian deer.
Really?
Like deer steaks in Italian dressing with a little bit of lemon juice on it. It's good. It's different. You sprinkle lemon juice on right as you're about to eat it. Kind of like you're dressing a steak or whatever.
Yeah.
Instead of using A1, just a little bit of lemon juice on it.
Hmm.
It's just
never thought about trying that.
It's good, man.
Always on fish, though. I like it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely like it on fish.
I'm a big fan of bluegill fillets and lemon juice and tartar sauce.
Speaking of bluegill fillets, that's what we're
butter
after.
Butter and lemon and onion.
We were supposed to be putting the moves on them gills this morning, but there was an issue with launching the boat, so that's going to be this evening's activities, I think. And hopefully we'll be cleaning some, but this lake, it's like you said, everybody and their brother fishes this lake, so it's not very big, so hopefully they didn't clean them all out. But they're on the beds, you said.
Yep.
Very popular spot right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out here. It's Memorial Day weekend, so. Well, on that note, I think we can rack this up. Wrap this up.
Yeah, we can rack it up, too. Everyone,
just so everyone knows, we will be doing a special fins edition on the boat before winter.
That's happening.
We'll be on the boat, on the water.
Probably some fall king salmon fishing right off the pier. It's going to be up close and personal.
He's going to pop my cherry on the big lake there.
Up close and personal fishing.
We'll bring you guys
right
live
off
updates.
The pier heads. You're not going to have to go far.
Videos.
Yep.
J-plugs. When them kings come up, get ready to start staging and coming in, we're tearing them up.
Nice. check the Facebook.
You need to get him out there on a 10 color. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
You need to get
400
him.
Copper.
Yeah, yeah.
Him,
yeah.
With a big board. Yeah. With a big board. Yeah. Where the release is real sticky and it won't release for him.
No, keep popping it, but real, though.
Yep.
Real. Yeah. Just keep reeling.
Yeah. Your shoulders are going to feel like mac and cheese, dude.
Yeah. Your forearms
and your wrists
will burn so bad.
My forearm was swollen for like 2 days after that tournament.
Yeah, it's a real thing. You get a 20-pound fish out 300 yards away from the boat on.
But I like that. I like that, though. You put in the effort and the time, and then when it's in the freezer, and then weeks later when you're cooking the damn thing, it's...
Oh, yeah. You remember that shit. Said, yeah, everybody that goes out and takes part of this beautiful thing, being an outdoorsman, being part of this natural world that we pride ourselves as part of being, is the pride that you take when you harvest something and then put that on your table for dinner. It's not like going to Martin's or going to Walmart and buying a steak out of the freezer and throwing it on the grill. You have a particular sense of pleasure and...
Accomplishment.
Accomplishment. Yeah, there's a whole...
You know, it's like eating a deer steak.
Yeah, there's a whole litany of emotions.
Your buck you got that year, you know? It's just...
Providing that.
Well, what I tell you, before I threw down the smoker, I said, "This is that big bastard I shot this last year." You know, and it's like as soon as I said that, it's like you get a rush of emotion and thoughts. It's like you just remember everything.
I've noticed also with the salmon fishing, you know, that's pretty much been my hobby for the last 15 years, and I give a lot of salmon away to the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my friends and family of friends. You know.
Yep.
It's because you know what salmon caught, and a lot of your elderly generation, you know, I guess that'd be the generation before us, all of us, they like salmon from the big lake. They're from this area, they like it, you know. But you know what it costs in the store to go buy a salmon fillet?
Shit, to get a smoked salmon fillet, you're paying
$10 for just for a raw fillet to go home and cook.
Yep, right.
You know,
a smoked salmon fillet can be $20 a pop.
Oh yeah,
you know, they
absolutely
are not cheap, and doing it yourself is. An easier way to appreciate where it comes from and the methods that you have to use to get it. When you go out and you spend a couple hours baking on a boat to get, you know, a limited fish if you're lucky, or just a couple fish, and then you take those home and you're tired, you know, you've been out doing it all day, but you got the grill hot, you throw the fillet on the grill, and you put it on the table, and mom is there, and she's
satisfaction.
Happy. Satisfaction.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat that afternoon where you went out in the morning, put in the work to get the fish, you're throwing it on the grill for dinner. Everybody's happy, and you know, you go to bed resting easy at night with a happy heart and a happy soul, man.
You know, I to this day, since I've deer hunted my whole life, every time I get a deer, whether I get two deers in one night, I cut the loins out, the inner loins, the smaller ones, you know,
tenderloin.
We grill them up.
Oh yeah,
that night.
I have to, man. It's
before
like
I even skin the deer out, dude. I get in there and I take them out.
Yeah, that's kind of the scene in our garage. Yeah, every time somebody shoots a deer, we rip it out, throw it on the grill.
Every time I go salmon fishing, I come directly home and cook fish on the grill.
Now, real quick.
Every time.
Do you ever eat any of the offal out of a fish, like the fish liver?
No.
No, I don't.
No.
I don't either.
No.
What about the roe?
Nope.
No.
What do you call them, roe?
Eggs?
I didn't know.
No.
Yeah,
I fish with them.
Yeah, right. Spawn?
Well, the nice thing about salmon fishing, if you've never been salmon is the one species of fish you can pretty much live around here and catch all year long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you put in the time and the effort to do it, you can be successful doing it.
Salmon and trout, I should say.
Yeah. There's always resident fish in the river. There are fish that live in the river that never go out to the lake there's always going to be fish in the river. It's just how hard do you want to work to find them, how much effort do you want to put into to chase a steelhead down, to chase a salmon down, to chase a lake trout down, you know.
And it's funny, because growing up around here, we were just talking about this earlier, Eric, how there's people that, they typically fish in the river for like one species. Like they're a walleye guy.
Right.
They're a pike guy.
Catfish,
you know what
guy.
I mean? Catfish guy.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, but they're out there, all of them.
You know, I'll be honest with you, I've like to troll Lake Michigan, you know, and perch fish. Hell, I love to perch fish, but my wife out perch
fishing. That's the only time I've been on the big lake was perch fishing.
My wife, she will flat out perch fish me. I mean, I'm good at it. I'm good at finding the fish and setting her, but I like, you know, once she gets on the fish, you know, I'll say, hey, you gonna drive us back? Yeah, I'll drive us back. All I gotta do is sit there and bait her hook,
right?
Take the fish off and drink beer.
Drink some beer. Yep. It's also, it's let her to be noted that big lake fishing is a great beer drinking sport.
Yes, yes.
If you're not catching fish, you can always catch a cold one in the cooler. So.
Yes, sir.
Well, on that note,
it's a great time.
Yeah.
Don't all right, we'll keep up on the Facebook page.
Yes, send us any questions, comments, let us know what you think about this episode or just how we're doing in general. We want to hear from you guys.
Need some recipes. Actually, I'll
give you guys updates on the fishing trip, too, so we know when that to expect that
yes,
as well.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely do that.
Yeah.
And, we'll talk. Yeah, never mind. I got something else I need to talk to you about.
I'd rather have sweatshirt weather than t-shirt weather.
Yeah. Well, on that note, let's shut this thing down and turn the AC back on.
Yeah.
It's hot.
All right, ladies and gents, we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
All right, everybody, that's it. Thanks for listening. Surprise, surprise, we are going to be doing a double drop this week. That's right, two episodes. Later this week, you get to hear the return of Chuck Powell, and we're going to be talking beaver. Four-legged beaver. Get your minds out of the gutter, people. Reason being, our editor is going across the big pond to Europe for a couple weeks, so obviously he won't be here to do his editing duties, so we're just going to drop them both early, and then unfortunately you guys won't get to hear from us for about a month. But when we come back, you know we're going to have some good stuff for you. Also a reminder, at the end of the month, we're going to go see Kevin Swanson, the Bear and Wolf Program Specialist for the DNR. You guys tired of me saying that yet? So if you guys have any questions, throw them at us. Seriously, we want your guys' input. All editing is done by Kyle Palmonter, and all music and artwork is done by the great and powerful Shane Yoder from PutThemInASong.com. Hopefully everybody's staying cool and getting on the fish. Keep your ears to the ground, and we'll talk to you next time, everybody.